Greetings to each of you. In Jesus' precious name, count it a privilege to be here with the saints at Summit View, brothers and sisters. And I'm glad that we've already had an introduction. Don't feel like we need a lot beyond that. I don't really know anyone here other than Brother Dwayne. Recognize just a few faces from hither and yon, but don't really feel like I know anybody here tonight, but I do count it a privilege to be here and share. Believe that we serve the same Lord and have the same goal, and I think you'll hear a common message, probably things that you've heard before, shared again tonight, and trust that we can be blessed together. For a message, the title that I've chosen to share on tonight, something that I was asked to share on recently, and I hesitated to because it stretched my thinking in a little different way, and it made me feel a little bit vulnerable. And I'll admit tonight that it still makes me feel vulnerable to preach on a subject like this. Feels a little bit like the sisters do when on Mother's Day we preach on Proverbs 31 and we lay it all out, and you say, wow, that's a beautiful picture, but how can I live up to Proverbs 31 for the sisters? For us tonight, the title is Allowing Our Children to Witness Our Faith. Allowing our children to witness our faith. And when I was given that, I wanted to say, no, I can't preach that. It's something that I'm struggling with. It's something that I don't know if I'm doing a very good job at. And so tonight, I would like to present this as an encouragement. The purpose of this message is to inspire us to be intentional about communicating our faith. And it's not something that just happens. It's not something that we always feel like we're doing really well at. But it's something that we need to have a vision for. How many parents are here tonight? How many of you have children? All right, I can't count that quickly, but must be, I'll just guess, around 60-some. It's quite a challenge, isn't it? Quite a responsibility. Quite a privilege. I can remember the many times we were privileged to bring home a new little one from the hospital, and what a blessing it is. And yet you think about the soul that you carried home, and then the challenge to give them guidance throughout life. Yes, our oldest is 21, courting, and our youngest is, they keep growing up, somewhere around 14 months. And privileged to also have two of my daughters and my wife along tonight. And we came with friends and folks that were a part of our church at Shirksville very recently. Of course, they started that in Hidden River. But welcome you all to Shirksville Mennonite Church. The family is a real part of my life. We're blessed with quite a few children, and I count it a privilege to be a dad, but I count it a challenge. For a text tonight, I invite you to Psalm 78. Psalm 78, we're going to read the first seven verses. And notice the burden here and how the faith is communicated to children in this passage. Psalm 78, verse 1. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come. And notice what he's showing to them. First of all, the praises of the Lord, his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. Do you notice the vision here? God wants to touch your life and also touch the life of your children. And it talks about the challenge of opening our mouths and talking about what God has done, speaking the praises of the Lord, His strength, and His wonderful works. What enthuses us today? What do we want to talk about? What do we share with our children? It encourages us here to talk about God so that our children can also grasp the things that God has done for us and that He could also be impressive to them and a part of their life. Maybe you're asking, why are we talking about a sermon like this? I'd like to first of all consider the snare of closet Christianity. The snare of closet Christianity. We as German and Swiss Anabaptists can be quiet and a pretty private people, keeping our thoughts and our emotions to ourselves. And times we can find it hard to share the things that we should be sharing. I would like to read some statements to you and ask you if this is where we should be. Closet Christianity's children say, I think my dad loves God, but I never hear him pray. I think my parents read their Bible, but I never see them read the Bible, and they never talk about what they read. I think my dad is a Christian, but I'm not sure what he believes. He obeys the church, but I don't think he has any personal convictions. I think my parents love God, but I never see them witnessing or inviting sinners to repentance. I think my dad loves God, but he talks most of building his business and plans to give when he is old or after he dies. He talks more about business expansion than kingdom expansion. I think my dad trusts God, but he's often anxious and worried about the future. You know, Russia could nuke us at any moment, and the economy really isn't looking that great. I think my dad serves God, but he works hard, has a nice collection of guns and hobby tractors, and he even bought us a nice vacation house on the beach. I think my mom and dad love God because they're always fussing about how the church is slipping. I think my mom and dad went to heaven, but I never heard them talk about it. They spent a lot of money on health care, trying to stay here a little longer. How do you feel about those statements? Is that where you want to be? Is that where you want your children to be as they observe your life? Are you satisfied with this approach? Allowing our children to witness our faith. What is our faith? How would you define your faith? You know, depending what your faith is defines how you try to accomplish the challenge of allowing your children to witness your faith. Now, I'm just going to let that there. We could go into that a little deeper. But I had to think about a young man who I hadn't seen for probably 3 years. I hadn't seen him for 3 years. I worked with him a lot about 6 years ago. And he came into my shop and he said, I'm looking for a job. And as he sat down there and started to share, I said, Samuel, are you a disciple of Jesus? I know he was raised in an Anabaptist home. And I said, are you a disciple of Jesus? And just like that, he had an immediate response. He said, no, I'm not a disciple, but I'm a believer. I'm not a disciple, but I'm a believer. Is there a difference? Tonight, are you a disciple of Jesus or are you a believer? Do you understand the difference? What is God looking for? Maybe just a few practical illustrations. How happy are you with, think of these items, how happy are you with a stove that burns through the wood? Yes, it's wintertime. Some of us have wood stoves. A stove that burns through the wood but doesn't radiate any heat. How happy are you with a lantern that puts off a lot of smoke and very little light? Hunters, how happy are you with a gun that roars but doesn't shoot straight? How happy are you, sisters, with an oven that you'd set it on bake, set it to 350, you put the casserole or whatever you're trying to make, the oven in the cake in the oven, and you let it, and you come back a half hour later and the whole thing shut off. It shuts off randomly, sometimes 10 minutes, sometimes after 20. You really can't depend on it. How happy are we with those kind of things? And I had to compare these things that we relate to, that we would be frustrated if that was the results we get. How God feels about parents who are like that stove. Yes, they say they know God, but they give little to no warmth to the children or the world that they relate to. The lantern, the parents who say they know God yet don't shine as examples in a dark world. The gun that roars but doesn't shoot consistently straight is like parents who are inconsistent, can't shoot on the mark every time. They're over here and they're over there, just depends which day you ask them. Inconsistent parenting that is hard to read and follow. The oven that shuts off randomly, it's like the parents who aren't dependable, who become more of a pain than what they're worth. And how does God feel? I would like to take us to direct a few more of our thoughts to God's plan for multi-generational faithfulness and how he wants to accomplish that. I invite you to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Here in Deuteronomy, we have instructions for how the Israelites were supposed to accomplish this. And a few things have changed, but many things have stayed the same on how we attempt to pass on what we believed to our children. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 1. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that ye might do them in the land whither ye go to possess it, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, to keep all his commandments, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou, thy son, and thy son's sons, all the days of thy life, and that thy days may be prolonged. Hear, O Israel, and observe to do it, that it may be well with thee, that ye may increase mightily, as the Lord thy God of thy fathers hath promised thee, in the land that floweth with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. We notice here what God wanted out of the children of Israel. He wanted them to obey him, to live in obedience. What else was he looking for? He was looking for a people, verse 2, who feared him, who kept the things that he was looking for them to keep, and who forsook the things that he was looking for them to forsake. He wanted to bless them, but he had a prescribed method of how they were going to accomplish his will and his desire for them. So first of all, he wanted them to live it, and then he wanted them to be intentional about passing it on. What was God looking for? Verse 5, thou shalt love the Lord thy God. God wants us to love him. And if we love somebody, it's not hard for the rest to follow. And a part of loving and obeying, part of that also comes the command to teach. Verse 7, to teach them. And how do we teach? He uses two particular methods here of imparting these things to our children. Maybe we could look just for a little bit at why. Okay, the word teach. Teach means to impart knowledge or wisdom. And that means to be intentional. But even that is just the way that you live your life and the things that you talk about. Talk is also in verse 7. To talk. Simply the verbal communication as you live from day to day. They should learn something from the way that you live your life and the way that you run your mouth. The things that come out of your mouth. Whether it's the intentional teaching or whether it's just your observations of life. And we'll look more at that later. Looking more directly at why we communicate our faith to our children, I would just like to mention six things. Why we teach. Why we communicate our faith to our children. Number one, we teach with the intent to transfer the fear of God into their heart. We teach with the intent to transfer the fear of God into their heart. And I believe that's the beginning of our teaching, a fear of doing wrong and having a respect for the things of God. Secondly, we teach with the intent to light the fire of love for God. Yes, to love God with all of our heart and all of their heart. And so we teach, thirdly, with the intent to walk together in obedience to God, even when it's inconvenient. Why do we teach these things? We teach because God desires to walk with every generation, no exception. Yes, he started here and he wanted to walk with the next generation and the next, down through the ages. God has desired to walk with each generation, no exceptions. We also teach because, number five, every generation needs God. Every generation needs God to be fulfilled and blessed, no exceptions. We find that in verses 2, 3, and 4. And the goal is to understand God and serve God, because knowing and serving God is the key to finding fulfillment in life. It's not in the speed of the car or the power of the engine or the thrill of bungee jumping or whatever. It's about the deep, settled peace of knowing God and knowing I'm exactly where God wants me to be in life. And that's the key to fulfillment. It's that simple. It's not complicated. Every generation needs that, to know God and to serve Him, to find fulfillment and blessing. Number six, we teach our children because it is a primary opportunity that we have to expand the kingdom of God. And it's right here at our fingertips. We don't have to go far. Yes, to win their souls, and then they in turn can apply their efforts, and that thing can just snowball. The ripples out on the pond, so to speak, as it just expands and touches a larger and larger audience. Bible examples of multi-generational faith. Yes, you don't have to go far here. Looking here in the New Testament, the beginning of the Bible, Genesis, we have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we know that God had a covenant with them. He changed their names as they related to Him in a personal way. God did a work in their hearts, and it kept going on to Joseph and generations of the faithful. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, I'm just going to read a verse or two there. 2 Timothy 1, verse 2, it says, "To Timothy, my dearly beloved son," Paul writing here, "I thank God, whom I served from my forefathers." And he talks about, goes on to say a few things there. Jumping down to verse 5, "When I call to remembrance the unfeigned," or the genuine faith, "that is in thee," of course, Timothy, "which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also." Here we have three generations of faithfulness, genuine faith. And I believe that every generation learned it because of the previous generation's faithfulness. leads me to a thought, and I'll just insert it here. And that is, why are you a part of the Church of God tonight? Why are you here? Is it because what your parents did? When and where did you believe that their faith was real? And what was it about their life that you say, now that's real, I want to make that mine? I would love to hear your testimonies. I got a few as I shared this. People who said, you know, my dad did thus and so, and I knew his faith was real, and I could also share from my life. And sometimes it's because the faith that my dad lived. Other times it's because the faith that my dad didn't live. I'm a Christian today because my dad was a drunkard. And as he lived the low life, I didn't want to live like he did. Some have that story to tell. And I'm thankful that I'm not there, but I realize that that's just of a compelling of a reason. Are my children, do they know God because of my input? What a blessing it can be, but it's not always that way. Sometimes children don't want to know God because everything that Dad stood for, I don't want to be there. I resist it because of what I saw also in his life. We'll talk a little more about those challenges later. But as you look back on some of these Old Testament characters, we don't see a lot. We're not told a lot of stories. We could look at Noah as he built the ark and think about how did he bring his children along through that terrible generation, the things similar to that we're facing today, the wickedness, and yet he did it so that they were with him in the ark. And I don't know what all he did as he was building the ark, but he preached to them righteousness, and they grew up and they followed. I was probably thinking about this message. I was mostly impressed thinking about the life of Abraham and how that the day that he walked up Mount Moriah and he took Isaac there along with him and the discussions that they had. And the Bible doesn't give us much of a window into what happened there. But as they walked side by side, how did an older man convince, very likely a teenager, or even older teenager, how did he convince Isaac to crawl up on the altar? What were the conversations they had as they walked together? I was simply challenged as I can let your mind run and imagine that there, but Abraham had a strong life of example that Isaac was willing to follow. And it's a challenge for us today to build that connection to the next generation. I'd like to look for the next part of the message about how to communicate our faith to our children. We communicate our faith to our children, and this goes back to Psalm 78 and some of the things that we read there. When we acknowledge and worship God in the world around us. We communicate our faith to our children when we acknowledge and worship God in the world around us. You know, look at that amazing sunset. The colors in the sky. The orange and the pink. Did that just happen? No, God created that sunset. The hues of pink and purple and the gold around the clouds. Maybe it's look at this beautiful flower, the creativity. Isn't this just amazing? All the detail, the stars at night. Maybe it's a stifling hot summer day and God sends a breeze. Do we acknowledge that God created the world around us? Nature in the world around us and the creativity and everything that he did is a tremendous opportunity to just simply point our children to God in what he has displayed for us in nature. All creation points to a creator. The variety of birds, the variety of the flowers and the trees. To acknowledge the hand of God in this. Also, acknowledging God in the movings in a day. You know, God opened this door for us to do this today. Or maybe God closed the door and he will open another one. But just simply acknowledging God in the world around us. And then as we acknowledge and take them to a place of worship, isn't this so much more than any human can ever come up with? As the master, developer, and creator did this, and we simply marvel and have beautiful worship of God. I believe we have that opportunity when the children are young And then as they grow, just to continually take them back to our wonderful Creator God and to live in worship. Secondly, we communicate our faith to our children when we keep an open Bible. When we keep an open Bible. When we as disciples of Jesus sit at his feet to learn and to listen, to learn his answers for life. You know, when we do that, it leaves a lasting impact. Where does Dad get his answers? Is it Google? Is it psychiatry or psychology? Children should see us with an open Bible. In our personal devotions, in family devotions, somewhere. You know, also, you know, just reading the Bible together as a family and meditating on its truth. It's enjoyable to read a passage, maybe read Proverbs together and have your children say, what does the Bible mean through the different Proverbs there, and to make it personal and just to apply it to our daily life. Children should know that we as parents, just like the Apostle Paul said, be ye followers of me as I follow Christ. That's 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. Be ye followers of me even as I also am of Christ. And that's our heart cry. There is nothing greater that we aspire for them in life than for that they would grow up and follow Christ with all of their heart. That's even greater than following me, is to follow Christ. You've probably heard it explained, but the Bible is truth, right? And as we study and compare scriptures, we come up with Bible doctrine. So we have truth that leads us to doctrine. And as we study the doctrines in the Bible, we have convictions. There are convictions that in our hearts we know that this is what we should do. And as we apply those convictions in practical Christianity, we have what we call applications. And as we apply and we do it in practical obedience over and over again, practice, 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 you have traditions. And so you connect the Bible as truth to doctrines, to convictions, to application, to tradition. And if the tradition that we practice, we can say, well, you know what? In 1 John it says, love your neighbor, or whatever. Take them back to the Bible for how we live and make that connection. If we live with an open Bible, it is a way of building respect and the fear of God versus, well, if it's good enough for Dad, it's good enough for me. If it's good enough for, and we simply shrug our shoulders and say, I don't know why we do what we do, but it's what the church leaders tell us. They need more of a foundation for their life than just some vague answer. Children should know that from a young age that we as parents welcome their spiritual questions, and we want to help them develop an understanding of God and his will for their life. There is no such thing as a stupid question if they ask it in sincerity. Moving on, number three, we communicate our faith to our children by intentionally seeking God's grace and wisdom as a resource for life's daily difficulties and unanswered questions. You know, when life gets tough, some folks fly apart. Yes, you know that when things go wrong in the mechanic shop or on the farm or wherever you find yourself, there is a spiritual and there's also a carnal response. Need I tell stories of the frustrations and then the flying wrenches and hammers and the words shared? I knew of an older man who one time when someone stopped in at his place, he was chasing the children around the yard on the tractor. He was frustrated. Talk of screaming parents and sullen children. I remember the story my dad told of when he was young, there was a father and a son trying to do electrical work, and you know how it is, you run the fish line through and then you pull the wire through. And so he had instructed his son that I'm going to pull on the fishing line wire here and you push on the electrical cord. And I think he did for a little bit, but after a bit, instead of pushing, son was over there pulling. And the dad couldn't figure out why it was jammed up, why it wasn't working. And until he figured it out. And then son was out the door and dad was out the door after him. And it didn't end very well. Across the yard they went, and it wasn't a pretty situation. You know, that's what can happen in life. And I'm sure that we could tell our stories of things that we've seen or heard about. We could also talk about seeking emotional stability to deal with the difficulties in life. And we can seek the meds, the professional counseling, to cope with all that. When life brings unanswered questions, things we don't have answers for, we can go a variety of directions, but we can also go to our knees to ask God, God, this is way bigger than me. Can you help me through this difficulty? And so this is mainly focused on prayer. Prayer, it is good for us to pray together as a family. And I know probably some of you in your heritage, you're commonly familiar with silent prayer. When I grew up, I didn't know anything about silent prayer. And occasionally we would get into these awkward situations where we gather around the table in other people's houses. Maybe we were there, they were babysitting us for the day, and they would just bow their head, and then what? It was silence, and I didn't know what to do. You know, you look around, it's what's going on here. And so my parents took time to teach us about silent prayer and what it meant. But I wasn't familiar with that. Parents led us in audible prayer, and not only that, they had us pray when we were very young, very little. They had us as children pray. Audible prayer. I believe prayer at mealtime should be more than just a ritual, more than silent prayer. Make it meaningful. Connect it to the events of today. God, we're gathered around this circle. We know life is, we're facing difficulties here today. We just pray that you would be with us. Help us to conquer our problems. Help us to get along with each other. Help us, whatever it is, just to bring God into the events and to ask for his help. Praying about the choices. God, we have a decision. We don't know if it's your will to get this property, but to pray with the children about those things. And then to thank God. Yes, several times in the last few years, there's been accidents where people's lives hung in the balance. And as we get the news, just to gather around with the children and pray about it. God, we're asking you to work. I believe it's an opportunity to let an impact on our children, and we need to take those opportunities. And yes, as I said before, and let them pray. Number four, we communicate our faith to our children effectively if, and I invite you to Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5, here we have the fruits, the works of the flesh and the works of the spirit. I'd like to contrast Galatians chapter 5, verse 15. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. And he goes on to list the lust of the flesh and its works, and walking in the Spirit and its works. And so there's two opposing routes that we can take. Verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us walk in the Spirit. And let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another and envying one another. This young man, as he sat in my office that I had talked about earlier, he was very bitter and he couldn't stop cursing and swearing at his mother. For the lifetime of controlling and manipulation that she had done. Yes, she was a mother trying to raise her children, and the dad was out in a southwestern town doing drugs, walking the streets of the city there, and trying to raise her children to follow God. Unfortunately, she resorted to manipulation and used a lot of ungodly methods of control as she tried to restrain her children. And today they hate her. They curse and swear at their mom because of how she endeavored to train them. Home shouldn't be a place for verse 15, but if you bite and devour, you're going to be consumed. Is that what we want at home, biting and devouring? No. Home should be a haven of rest. When we use God's methods, yes, building our marriage God's way through love and respect between the marriage relationship, teaching and training discipline. We use God's method for building marriage in our home relations and dealing with conflict. Home can be a haven of rest and blessing. Number four, I don't guess I said it, so much words, but we communicate our faith to our children effectively if our homes are filled with the fruit of the Spirit. Number five, we communicate our faith by a consistent godly example. And this is the hardest for some of us. More is caught than taught. You've heard that. You've also heard we cannot ask them to go where we're not willing to lead them. Our inconsistencies can effectually block any attempt to perpetuate our faith. You've also heard your actions speak so loudly that I can't hear what you're saying. If we hold our children to a stricter line than what we're willing to walk, they will resent our ruling hand. If our walk and talk on Sunday doesn't line up with the week, our children see it. You know, if we scold our boys for playing a computer game, boys, you're wasting your life. And then 2 weeks later, we're the one. Oh, that was interesting. I want to see how that works. And so we figured it out. We even later show them how to get to the second level. Anyone done that here? I've done something like that. You know how foolish we are when we are inconsistent. And it's very devastating to our children to do things like that. And there's many illustrations that we could talk about. But we communicate our faith when we live a consistent godly example that they can count on day after day, whether the sun is shining or it's raining. Dad is always standing for the same things, and we live a consistent witness. Number six, we communicate our faith by using life events as a lesson to teach. Proverbs 1:20 says, "Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets." Wisdom crieth in the streets. Using the practical events of life to be a lesson for our children. And these events happen all the time. I believe it was just several weeks ago, there was a young man who was in the bar with his friends in Altoona, and he stepped out into his car, and he invited a few friends with him, and they got out on the road, and he had to show how fast his car was. And he hit the triple digits. And he didn't only hit the triple digits, he also hit a pole. And unfortunately, the emergency personnel literally picked up his body parts off the road as they were scattered around there. And I believe at least two of them lost their life in that accident. It's a life lesson. Son, this is what happens if you go to the bar and drink. Son, this is what happens when you speed and break the laws of the land. This is what happens when you try to show off. There's just a lot of lessons. Is this the way you want to live? Is this where you want to go? We can just simply use them as life lessons. And we don't even have to really be pointed about that. We can just simply state the fact of, you know, I wonder how that young man feels about that today, over in eternity, as he crossed over to the other side. He can never come back. Is that how you want to go? Is that how I want to go? But help our children to process those life lessons. Another young man I've done quite a bit of work with over the years, just recently again was caught doing drugs, went back to jail for how many times, and it's a life lesson. There was a time when brothers in the church told me, don't reach out to this young man because you'll lose your sons because of his life. And it is true that he has had some negative influences on our family, but there's also been so many more ways that my boys have learned. You know, don't go this way if you want to be successful in life. Don't steal, don't do drugs, and it just goes on and on, unless you want to spend years of your life in prison. Yes, the young man that sat there begging for a job was also sitting there with a cast on his arm. His mom, because of a big argument they had, wanted him to move out of the house, and as she was calling the police, he got angry and just started punching holes in the drywall. He punched a number of holes until he hit drywall with a 2x4 behind it, and he broke his wrist. So he was sitting there. You know, you're not going to prosper if you punch holes in drywall. Sooner or later, you'll break your wrist. And it's just a simple little lesson. But we can help our children spare themselves a lot of difficulty just by learning lessons that are rather obvious, that are happening all around us. Children, sit up and take notice. We communicate our faith by using life's events as a lesson to teach. Number 7, lastly, we communicate our faith by admitting our faults and asking forgiveness. Yes, even Dad has to come back and say, you know what? Son, I'm sorry. I know you made a mistake, and I lashed out at you. I said words that I shouldn't have said, or whatever it was. I'm sorry. I need your forgiveness. We communicate a number of things through that, but one of the most valuable things is we teach them that Dad finds it very valuable to maintain a clean conscience. And children forgive easily. They easily go on and they forget. They move on. But if we don't come back and say we're sorry, they can go for years remembering the things that we did. And it can be a stumbling block to them. But we communicate our faith by admitting our faults and asking them for forgiveness. But there is a real blessing in humbling our hearts and seeking brokenness and forgiveness. In closing, may the testimony of my children be, and yours, I know my dad loves God because I see him on his knees and hear him cry out to God in intercession over a lost soul, his wayward brother or neighbor, or the cares of this life to provide for our needs. I know my mom loves God because she won't let us dress immodestly. I know my parents love God because they love to go to church. They won't miss a service. I know my dad loves God because he gives so much money to the needy. I think of a Beachy Amish man who was privileged to go to his funeral in a Midwestern state this summer. As he passed away, they told how that the IRS investigated him because he gave too much money for his income. And I remember meeting the man as he came around, and he drove an older, dilapidated car. And I wondered, does he even trust that for the trip? And I felt sorry for him. I thought he must have been a poor man because he probably didn't have a good job. But I found out that wasn't the case. He was poor because he gave so much. He invested in the next generation. He gave his money to the school because it was an opportunity to build the kingdom. And what a blessing and comfort his children found after he was gone. They knew where Dad's heart was, and there was no question where Dad was after he was gone. I know my dad loves God because he's so kind to Mom. I know my dad loves God because he came back and said, I'm sorry, when he lost his temper over my mistake. I know my dad loves God because he sings while he works. I realized somewhere I lost my last page, or I just simply mislaid it here in my stack. Anyway, it's all right. Might still have it here. Anyway, that's what happens when you don't do a tally. I know my mom and dad love God because they invested everything they had in the kingdom of God. Everything they had was committed to God, and they gave their lives in surrender. I know my dad loves God because of, you know, the life that he lived. And I know that my testimony is that God is real. I know God is real because I saw him living in my mom, and I saw him living in my dad. I believe that's the testimony that we want our children to have. And unfortunately, that isn't always the case. What do you want your children? And so it takes intent. You know, through the growing up years, a lot of stressful years, raising our children, providing for their needs, caring for everything that it takes to get them off to school and to provide for a growing family. It takes a lot of energy and effort, and many of us know all about it. But are we investing in the things that will make a difference so that they say, you know what, when I grow up, I want to serve God just like my mom and my dad? Or will they say, you know that my dad's religion, I don't want any parts of that. It was a sham. It was nothing more than a facade. I know that we're all real here tonight, and I know that we have a lot of room to grow. At least I'm the first one to say that I do. But still, we have goals and ambitions. Let's be intentional about leaving a witness for our children. Yes, as they tag around our feet, and then as they grow, may we lead them to Jesus, to the well of everlasting life that can be a resource for their life and for their spiritual needs.